Good evening. I'm K2, Romeo, India, Whiskey. And you will also be hearing Mel, K2, Kilo, Echo, Yankee. Mel and Dick act as coordinators for the Technical Net. The main purpose of the Technical Net is education. Mel and Dick gather the clan of ham radio operators who help each other understand how all this complicated stuff works. Antennas and transmission lines and propagation and transmitters and receivers and the 26 different kinds of ham radio. There's a lot of stuff there. Inside of each ham radio operator, I think there is a kind of a scientist trying to get out. He wants to understand how all this stuff works. What is Mother Nature telling us? How to make it work better? It's a fun hobby. One of the most educational hobbies there is. Somewhere out there, I'm told, there are some crazy people who like technical subjects and radio so much, wireless subjects so much, that they're not going to be watching the Academy Awards tonight. I'm told that there's a few of them out there. If so, they're going to sign into us right now. They're going to give us the call letters, their name, followed by the word yes, which means they do have a question or a comment for the net. A typical sign, it would sound like this, WS2N, Paul, and yes. Paul, as you probably know, is the guy who normally tells us what NASA is doing. And there's a beautiful NASA program on lately on PBS called BLAST, B-L-A-S-T. I'll be discussing that a little bit later. You've also been hearing more and more subjects of what's going on with Toyota automobiles and whether or not there's an electronic problem. And there's a significant amount of evidence saying there is a serious electronic problem. It's not just mechanical. It's not just the gas pedal. Although that sounds off subject for ham radio operators, let's face it, a significant number of us, particularly on this particular repeater, the Limark repeater, Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club. Let me drop. They operate automobiles. They operate radios from their car. Quite a few of them drive Toyota, Prius, or Lexus automobiles, the ones that are being recalled. And there's lots of evidence that the problem has existed since 1998. There are smart people predicting that the recall will eventually go back that far. And if you're not smart enough to know, if you haven't been educated to know to put your car into neutral, you could be in a lot of trouble. Okay. Do we have any people who would like to check in? Give me your call letters and name and the word yes at this time. K2RIW. My name is Dick and we're listening.
K2RSO. Frank, yes. Comment for Cablevision subscribers.
Over.
Kilo Bravo 2, Mike Alpha Romeo, Gabe, yes.
This is Kilo Charlie 2, Tango Delta Lima, and I have some information pertaining last week's subject. It's on Electrosmog, I believe I was on 2 weeks ago. Name is John, and yeah, I do have traffic.
Okay, so far we've had a bunch of doubles and triples, but I did manage to pink out Frank, Gabe, and John in that order. Who else is out there giving me calls?
This is W2RUZ. Your name is Les?
Yes.
Okay, RUZ, did you say your name is Les?
That's a Roger.
Okay, I heard Les. Who was the person that doubled with him?
November to X-ray, Juliet November.
LT, yes.
Okay, I heard XJN, and the other person who said yes, what was your call letters?
Whiskey 2, India, Lima, Papa, Bob, yes.
Okay, we got you, Bob. And we got Wesley. So, right now, so far, as I said before, Frank, Gabe, John, Les, Wesley, and Bob. Did we skip anybody so far? K2RIW listening.
Yeah, good evening, all. This is K2KEY.
Yeah, that's the mystery guest named Mel. Thank you, Mel. Okay, let's start up with Frank. Mr. RSO, and I should know, is it K2RSO, W2RSO? Give me the rest of that, Frank, and go right ahead with your question. And make sure you wait for the beep and 1 or 2 seconds beyond that to reset this machine. It's got a long delay for the out-of-area people. And also watch your watch. Every minute and a quarter or so, make sure you drop and reset the machine. You got it, Frank. RSO, K2RIW.
Okay, good evening, Dick and members on the net. I have a comment, not a question, and it's for all of you Cablevision subscribers who can't watch the Oscars tonight. I remember a few weeks ago we were discussing the conversion to digital TV. I did go out and buy a digital TV converter, and I'm glad I did, because today I connected it for the first time, and not having a TV antenna to connect it to, I tried something kind of unorthodox, and it worked. I have a Discone antenna that I use for my scanner. I used a PL259 to F connector adapter, plugged in a length of RG6 into the converter box, and channel 7 is now coming in beautifully. So I've solved that problem. Just a little information for anyone who has the same problem. So I'm going to be signing off and listening to the Oscars. Back to you, Dick, and to RSO.
Very fine, Frank. Very crafty. Let me drop for long enough. Gotta wait a second or two beyond the beep. Very crafty. That's the Discone antenna. Part of the reason I think you're a little bit lucky there, Frank, is that a Discone antenna, with the usual installation, is purely vertically polarized. It's a nice strong signal from ABC television at 174 to 180 megs, I think it is roughly.
It's circularly polarized, Dick.
Uh-huh. That explains it. Alrighty. I thought they were purely horizontally polarized. So they're circular, and therefore it works. The Channel 7 signal usually is so darn strong that I think if you just took a piece of RG6 cable, brought it to the top of your house, and took center conductor and shield and strung them in opposite directions like a poor man's dipole, I give you an 80% chance you're going to pick up enough of that signal in the Nassau area for sure, where you're going to be getting over-the-air broadcast television. I use strictly over-the-air broadcast television antennas, and I've never signed up for cable in all of my life.
By the way, 7 is VHF, not UHF.
Good to know. Yes, sir. 174 to 180 megs. Do I have the frequency right, Eric?
That's it.
And since that's between 30 and 300 megs, that's VHF. And so that VHF signal is pretty easy to build. And for you and I to set up a dipole, just by stringing a piece of RG6 cable, stripping away the shield for that length, so the center conductor and the shield are in opposite directions, making a horizontally or vertically polarized dipole. Doesn't matter. Maybe even slant. And probably you could string that into the roof of your house, out the window of your apartment or whatever. It would probably give you enough reception of Channel 7. Move the antenna around a little bit until you get the right signal strength reading on the digital converter. And you can be watching the Channel 7 over-the-air broadcast from now on, including the Academy Awards tonight. Well done, Frank. Okay, the next person who signed in was Gabe, something 2 MAR. Didn't get the prefix. You got it, Gabe. K2RIW on the TechNet. My name is Dick.
K2RIW, Kilo Bravo 2, Mike Alpha Romeo. Basically, I have a question regarding installing my Java Plus repeaters 13.0 from the ARRL. My computer will not accept it. There's a program in there called Total Security. Some kind of program I did not request to my computer to have it installed, and it happened to get installed anyway on my computer. I was on the internet, and it somehow, some kind of a virus type of program installed itself in the computer. When I go to install the Java Plus for repeater type disk into the, try to make it go into the computer system, the computer just rejects it. I don't know if there's someone out there might know of a program that will eliminate this, I believe it's called malware type of program, to get it erased from the computer. K2RIW, KB2MAR.
Yeah, I think I've heard that pronounced malware, but I'm not sure. and I'm kind of light on computer knowledge. Eric, I hope you heard that question, and maybe you've got a suggestion for Gabe, KE2EJ, our broadcast person and computer expert, K2RAW. You got it, Eric.
I'm sorry, Dick. I stepped away. I didn't hear the question.
Okay, Gabe, please repeat the question about the, oh, I think it's malware that you're running into. KB2MAR, Gabe, K2RIW. You got it, Gabe. Wait for the beep and watch your watch.
Okay, Eric, basically, I'm trying to install the Java Plus repeaters 13.0 from the ARRL. Unfortunately, the computer will not have it installed into the system because there's a computer, I'm sorry, there's a program called Total Security. Now, this type of program happened to install itself while I was on the internet. It's a kind of a virus type of program. And what happens is I go to install it and the system, it looks like it's going to install and it just, the screen just doesn't do anything at all. I don't know if it's some kind of a malware type of program that will basically take the virus type program out of the computer. KE2EJ, KB2MAR.
KC2TDL with information.
Well, actually, you know, Bernie is K2IO. He's probably better equipped to answer that because I'm not familiar with the program that you're talking about. Actually, Microsoft has a malware removal tool which you can use, and if you have a security program that prevents it from installing any kind of ActiveX plugin, there should be a way for you to tell it that this is a good plugin that you want to use. But let's turn it over to K2YO and see what he has to say, Bernie.
Yeah, I haven't heard Bernie sign in tonight, but I did hear KC2, I think it's Tango Delta Lima. Go right ahead, John.
Yes, I have actually heard of this program before. It has been on the internet, and what was it called? Total Security? I think that's what it's called. Anyway, it has been out there, and I have actually been, sanctioned twice by, like, this stuff that's, it says My Security Online and Total Security. Like, I'm just sitting there at the computer, and all of a sudden, the page just quickly switches to this thing that says, your computer's infected, install this program. It's been going around, and I've actually been attacked, like, 4 times, but, as soon as you see that, just kill the web page, because it's going to want you to, install it. A program that's bad for your computer. So, I'll just note to everybody out there on air, particularly sites like Facebook and other social networking like that. Back to my control.
And to XCM.
Wesley recognized, but John, first, you seem to have some familiarity with it. Tell me what you recommend that Gabe do now that he's attempted to make his installation of, I think it's an ARRL program, and he's getting this hang up. If you were him, John, what would you do? TDL, K2RIW?
Well, it depends on the magnitude of the virus. What exactly is the virus preventing you from doing, Gabe?
Preventing me from going into add remove programs to try to uninstall it, it will not let me get into access to that particular part of the computer system. I tried to go into add remove program, try to take out the virus, and it will not disappear. It won't even let me go into that screen. It just locks it. I try to make the command on the desktop there, actually when you start program function on the desktop, you go up into the list there, and you try to select add remove program, control panel, and it will not go there. I just double click onto the icon, and what happens is the hourglass comes out for a little bit and just stops. Nothing happens.
And to exceed.
Wesley recognized that. John, you got an answer for that one?
It appears the virus is actually interfering with the actual function of the computer. This doesn't seem like your average virus that just, makes your computer go blank or something. appears that, you know, it's like interfering with the function, I would actually maybe reboot Windows, like if you had, like, or like whatever OS you're using, like if you get a disk out, you know, the like if you're using XP, get the XP disk rebooted that way. I wouldn't say your computer's compromised, but, you know, like, what's your, do you have an antivirus, do you have antivirus software currently on your computer?
It's some kind of a security virus from Microsoft, but it's not detecting this virus. Basically, on the lower right-hand corner of the screen, there's a total security icon right there. I click on it, and it goes, you know, your system is now protected by this and that, some baloney like that. Meanwhile, it's not. It's actually causing all the problems. If it could be something else also. But I think it's the total security program that's in it that I want to eliminate. I was thinking of to try to reinstall the software into the computer, I want to format the hard drive. You recommend that?
Well, it's a thing by Microsoft. So did this program formatting the hard drive? Let me think about that. You know, I would try that. I would. But I'd also try reinstalling, like, you know, whatever OS you're using. First, I'd get, like, a professional antivirus program onto the computer, not just... Because, you remember, if this antivirus program came pre-programmed to the computer, like, it's just Microsoft Defender or something along those lines, I'd get a professional program. Like, you know, Norton Antiviruses, something along those lines.
Okay, can I say something?
Head ahead.
Okay, November to X-ray, Juliet, November. Okay. First, what you got to do is, most likely, most of these things that happen, they are not viruses. It is just that this menu is installing. It is showing you that you have a virus and you've got to install the total security, whatever. They want your money. So what you got to do is just switch off the computer and put it again. But if you already have it, and you, instead of just switch off the computer, what you got to do is restore the computer to the previous stage. Take any day, a week ago, whichever one, is going to disappear, most likely. Now, if you cannot do it, the last stage is restore the computer to the factory settings. Before you do it, you try to save some files. That's what you got to do. And to X-ray, and mostly is as I say, is I have a friend who is a womanizer. He's a beautiful person, but he likes to watch ladies, and that's what happened when he watched them. And to X-ray.
I wonder if you've got any further questions on that, Gabe. KB2MAR, K2RIW, and the TechNet.
My computer does come with a section of the hard drive where you can reinstall the program, the actual factory programs that were installed into the computer. I think that's a great start, but I think the best way is to format the hard drive, totally erase everything off that hard drive, because I don't know if that's going to totally take that virus out. I could try that route. That's probably the better way, because if I format the hard drive, I have to reinstall every single program that I have on the computer. I mean, I know I have to do it, even if I restore the system, I still have to do it, but it's worse if we format it. I think it's more involved than that.
That's not really the issue, because when you try to format your hard drive, you're losing that part of file and that partition that is responsible for resetting your computer to the factory settings. I would not recommend that. And to NJM.
You're an idiot.
So just do a system restore, is that right?
That is correct. Try to make a system restore to the earlier date. And try to take it like a week ago before that, something like that. Now, if that doesn't work, then try to put the factory restore. That means bringing it to the point as you have purchased the computer. And to Israel.
Comment. That's what it was. K2FLF, I think it was. Start with your name, sir, and then your comment.
Hi, good evening, everybody. Yeah, if you're going to use that system restore, it's advisable to do it in safe mode, because if you do it in regular mode, a lot of times it'll go through the process, but it won't work. It'll tell you at the end, you know, it has not been changed. A good part of the time, it will work in safe mode. And if you do get it to work, and it does get rid of the problem, I recommend you go out and buy yourself Norton Security or Norton 360. It's a new lighter version, completely rewritten version. It checks the viruses on its own every couple of minutes and installs them, and you don't even know it. It's a very small program. It's rated at the top right now, and that's what I recommend you do. And you can get it online for like $30, whatever. And to FLF, and good luck with that restore.
Okay, thank you for the information, Mark. Gabe, any further questions on that?
Basically, I got all the information I really needed here. That 360 sounds good. I'll try to restore first. If that doesn't do it, then I'll just get the Norton 360 program. Thanks a lot, guys. KB2MAR, back to net.
Okay, when you get that solution, Gabe, please come back and let us know what you found. I suspect your problem is not a unique one, and other people have run into something similar. The next person who signed in was John, KC2 Tango Delta Lima. Go right ahead with your question or comment, John. K2RIW in the TechNet.
Yes. 2 weeks ago, I think, I was on the TechNet and I was talking about electrosmog and transients. I was talking about that topic, and I did some research, and here's what I came up with for those that have heard me last time. On the machine. Limit metal materials around house. Metals amplify transient radiation. Radios, televisions, or alarm clocks can all increase exposure to radiation if these items are placed next to one's bed. As you sleep at night, they generate some kind of transient force. It is possible to use plants to absorb transient radiation, helping limiting radiation exposure. Cell phones and Wi-Fi networks. Cell phone towers and Wi-Fi networks are particularly dangerous. Let me let it drop. And certain solar activities like CMEs can also be relatively harmful. And as I speak right now, I have a mag mount next to me. I think I'm getting about 5 watts of current, you know, radiated around my head. I'm talking from an HT in my kitchen. Electrical fields and rays. Although higher in intensity, these rays cannot pierce houses but are usually found in CRTs, monitors, and power lines. Magnetic fields rays are more common than electric fields. They can create electric current in the body. When electric wires are kept in parallel, the electric field cancels. You can detect these electric fields using a Gauss or EMF or electrosmog meter or detector, something like that. And, you know, it isn't too hard to build. You could even use, like, an oscilloscope or a CRT to detect that. It's also important to, you know, use sunblock, like, when you go to the beach, because, yes, you can receive cosmic radiation from space. Just like, you know, I said about CMEs, that's also a bad thing. And today I actually performed my own experiment in transients. I showed how much a human body can be an antenna. From my basement, I disconnected the antenna jack on my radio, and what I did was, from my basement, put my finger, just tapped it onto the antenna jack, and all of a sudden I was receiving a conversation from 2 meters through my body. I was showing that my body was an antenna. Removed my finger, the radio went silent. Put my finger right to the back of the rig, right by the antenna jack is, and I was getting audio. And that just shows, you know, the body can transmit and receive electromagnetic radiation. Just like that. It was on the, it was on this machine I got the convo. And that's what I gotta say. Over to you, Net Control, KC2TDL, Brightly.
You've entered a very interesting subject, John. I got lots of opinions on this one. But let me go one step further before I tell you what I think. Tell me where in your mind, John, is the threshold of alarm. The fact that enough signal can be picked up by your body and your finger to a radio is, from one point of view, saying that, yes, RF energy is impinging on your body. From another point of view, you could say the receiver is extremely sensitive, only needs a quarter of a microvolt of signal, which can be picked up with a couple of inches of wire or the finger on your body, and the radio starts working, depending on how close you are to the repeater station itself. So where is your threshold of alarm about electromagnetic smog and transients and radio signals in general? And what do you believe we should do about it to protect ourselves from this? With your reading so far, what have you discovered along those lines, John? KC2TDL, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Comment.
Wesley, hold on, please. Let me talk to John for a few sessions back and forth here first. Go ahead, John.
Well, I'm going to have to stay on the side threshold where the radio is just a really strong receiver. I'm going to have to stay to that side, but, you know, it still shows that the body can still radiate energy. Small amounts, but, you know, just like you said, like 2 weeks ago, you know, sitting in front of 1.5 kilowatts going through an antenna for 6 minutes, and your eyes will begin to hurt if you stare at it. Stuff you can do to prevent this: limit metal around the house, try to wear protective clothing when you're outside. I mean, you know, if you want to get a tan because, you know, you want to receive vitamin D or just look good, you know, it's good to do once in a while. I don't think all this radiation will kill us, but, you know, it's important not to live roughly 20, 30 feet away from a cell phone tower. It's important to limit electric RF energy into your repeater. I mean, not your repeater, your amateur station. Because, you know, if you have, like, a big antenna on your roof and you're using the legal limit, you might not want to do that unless you're, like, trying to do a contest. As we speak right now, the antenna is right in front of me. I'm getting radiated. Other stuff you might want to do for electric protection, you might want to ground. You might want to do RF grounding in your house, like, for your antenna on the roof. You might want to keep plants in your house. You know, just like I said, plants can absorb some electromagnetic radiation. And that's my input on it. If anyone else would like to say something, please go ahead.
John, you have fallen into a trap of reading some of the media on the subject and talking to people who have partial information. To my knowledge, the majority of the problem, or what you and I are now discussing, mostly radio-type, possible radio frequency biohazard is what we're really discussing. We radio amateurs have to concern ourselves with that. Way back in roughly 1905 or so, when radio was just starting to become popular, people discovered that an antenna will send out a signal in all directions with a slight antenna pattern, but essentially sends out signals in all directions. Therefore, the antenna, but that is the antenna of a radio system, radiates. When you look up the word radiation in a good dictionary, and it means to send signals in all directions. Perfectly good word. And it was a very acceptable word until World War II came along, and we now had nuclear radiation. We had Hiroshima and Nagasaki and an atomic bomb. And now, all of a sudden, we had nuclear radiation, and the commonality there is the word radiation. Let me drop. And to compare nuclear radiation and radio signal radiation is really an apple and orange comparison. Extremely, extremely different. And so, with hindsight, had we properly labeled what an antenna does, we would have called it radio transmission. We could have called it radio signaling. We could have called it radio propagation. We should have used any other word than radiation. The general public hears the word radiation, they think nuclear radiation, and they think cancer. And a very, very strong misunderstanding is taking place there. Living next door to a cell phone base station, as close as you possibly can get, when you look at that great big piece of hardware, You look at the 50,000 pounds of hardware, 120 feet high, with all those antennas on top, transmitting all those signals. That's a formidable looking piece of hardware. Anybody in his right mind would be afraid of that. Now let's get specific. You know what the inverse square law means. That means when a signal is being transmitted by...
Dick, you've completely timed the entire system out.
Sorry about that. I'm telling everybody to watch their watch, and I'm not doing it. I'll try again. So, if you're living directly next door to that cell phone base station, every time you double the distance from that antenna or a light bulb, every time you double the distance, the amount of signal that gets to your body is cut down by a 4-to-1 ratio. Multiply the distance by 10-to-1, and then the amount of signal you get is cut down by 100-to-1. Square the distance difference, and that's the difference in radiation, the difference in the amount of power that you get. Let me drop. Living next door to that base station, as close as you possibly can get, is about 200 feet away. It's a 150-foot high antenna. It's got an antenna that's aimed out to the horizon. It's got a pancake pattern. You're below that antenna pattern. But even if I don't count that, then it transmits a little bit more power than your cell phone. But the cell phone against your head is a quarter of an inch away. When you compare a quarter of an inch to the 200 feet, that's something like a 10,000,000-to-1 ratio when you do the inverse square law. You account for the extra power that the station transmits versus your cell phone. The bottom line is the cell phone against your head gives you 1,000,000 times more RF energy into your body than if you lived directly next door to that cell phone base station. I'm pretty sure that a cell phone is safe. Assuming that a cell phone is safe, living directly next door to the base station is 1,000,000 times more safe. That's the physics. You say that in front of a zoning board, let me drop, and they'll think you're crazy. You're comparing this 3-ounce thing in your hand called cell phone to the 50,000 pounds of hardware next door. Of course that sounds crazy. When it comes to broadcast transmitting antennas, you might live a quarter of a mile away from a broadcast station, and you're afraid about those radio waves and the radio waves of the local police dispatching and the fire dispatching and the taxi cab dispatching and whatever. You add all of these signals together. You think they're going to add and create a hazard to your health. Almost absolutely not. If you want to get down to the specifics, you read the best document on the subject, where there's a 60-year study by the world's best research organizations and institutes and whatever. It's called the American National Standard Institute document C95, Charlie 95. It represents 60 years of research. There is a similar document in the United Kingdom done by the Radiological Protection Board and so on. And there you'll find out that you measure the amount of RF energy reaching a human being. You measure it in volts per meter. You measure it in milliwatts per square centimeter, whatever. You'll discover that a hell of a lot of what we do is extremely safe. The example I gave that gets to the threshold of non-safeness is that, yes, if you are transmitting a 1.5 kilowatts into a dipole antenna and you place yourself a couple of feet away from it and you stay there, key down for 6 solid minutes, I think you're at the threshold of alarm, where there is one possibility, if you do that a whole lot of days of the week, you might do yourself some harm. But it takes a whole lot of specific things like that. Or if you were foolish enough to bugger up your microwave oven so that you could turn it on full blast with the door open, and you put your head right at the aperture of that door, you do that and you're pushing your luck. But other than doing things crazy like that, the vast majority of what we do, even though it's called RF radiation, let me drop, is reasonably safe. So a hell of a lot of what we do that looks unsafe is really safe. Probably the least safe thing we do, and you hit that one already, and that is if you're going out into the sun in the springtime or the summertime for the first time of the year where your body is not prepared for it, you haven't gotten any tan, and you do that for more than 15 minutes without sunscreen on, there's a good possibility you're going to get excess sunburn on your skin. You've got to be a little bit careful on that one. And people who are out in the sun a whole lot do get an awful lot of artificial aging of the skin. The ultraviolet rays are quite damaging to the skin if you're not covering up your body and putting on the right kind of sunscreen when you're out there for hours on end. We may think people look desirable because they got a nice solid tan, but in reality, that is representing a kind of skin damage. You've got to go easy on that one. But an awful lot of the RF energy you're suspecting is dangerous, and you think you have to keep yourself away from metal and everything should be grounded. I think that's much stronger than required, John. I think you're worrying unnecessarily. Anything that is mildly conductive, let me drop. Any simple piece of wire, like a clip lead, or the conductivity of your body, acting as an antenna, picking up a microvolt of signal, and you touch the center conductor of your receiver, and the receiver is extremely forgiving of a unmatched antenna, and it's extremely sensitive, a modern-day receiver, where a quarter of a microvolt will give you a good signal coming out of that loudspeaker. The fact that a receiver responds when you touch that in that manner does not represent anything even close to the point where the amount of RF energy touching your body is beyond the point of threshold. If you did expose your body to the current American National Standard Institute maximum permitted exposure, 1 milliwatt per square centimeter, which I think turns out to be, is it 1 watt or 10 watts per square meter? If you expose yourself to that amount of power, the threshold of a law, the amount of signal you would have on your body when you touch that center conductor of the receiver, it would take the S meter. And if you were using AM broadcast, you didn't have enough dynamic range to the automatic gain control of the receiver might be overloaded. The amount of signal that would give your body harm when you touch that center conductor probably would be overloading your receiver. It might be beyond the dynamic range of its automatic gain control circuit. So until you get down to the specific numbers, the fact that you can detect something like touching the receiver doesn't mean you're anywhere near the magnitude of where it could give you harm. I do recommend you do more reading and more study on this particular subject, John. It's a subject that very few people know anything about. Let me drop. And you got to be careful what you read. You got to read objectively. 95% of the data you're going to find on the subject on the internet is beautiful stuff, but look out. 5% of it, maybe 3% of it, could be almost complete garbage. There is one particular professor in Paris, France, who has come to the conclusion that every exposure is an overexposure. Any amount of detectable RF energy is intolerable. He's telling people that cell phone base stations are dangerous, that you shouldn't live near them. Cell phones are dangerous. You shouldn't be anywhere near broadcasting. He's telling people all kinds of things. He happens to be dead wrong. He has been discredited in a number of good journals by the Antennas and Propagation Society of the IEEE and Science Magazine and so on. He's been discredited. But if you select that particular set of articles of this French professor, as a number of people have around Long Island, and they say, aha, there it is, it's dangerous, and now you take the people of Bayville, Long Island, who have been trying for 3 years to remove all antennas from their town. That means cell phone, fire, police, ambulance dispatching. They want every single one of those antennas removed from their town. And they've got three simultaneous lawsuits trying to make that come about. This is preposterous. It's ridiculous. They're circling the wagon. The community in that town of 7,000 people is against their town. There's their village board, because the village board is in favor of the antennas. They're against their... Let me drop. They're against their county, they're against the state, they're against the governor, they're against the federal, the Department of Homeland Security. They believe that all these agencies are lying to them and creating harm. The current antennas in the town of Bayville are only giving them 85% coverage. A policeman operating in the town, in theory, has to memorize all the places in town where his police radio system does not work. And he cannot pull somebody over in that town, in that area, because he would be out of communication range and his safety net wouldn't exist. So with only 85% coverage, with the current antennas that are on the water tower near the school, and the community believes that the cancer that occurred in the school is caused by those antennas, they're completely ignoring the fact that some of the wells in the town had to be turned down because they were contaminated, and the fact that they live near New York City and the shore sometimes has various contaminations that wash up on the shore from New York City. They're ignoring all that. They're assuming the antennas are doing it, and they want all antennas in
the town removed. A thoroughly unreasonable thing to request. And if they succeeded in doing it, I can tell you the rate at which people will die in that town from a lack of communication with emergency services. So if you take a misunderstanding of RF energy and the effects on human being, and you take it to the ridiculous extreme, and if you selectively choose that particular set of bad data that you can find on the internet if you search far enough, and then you start setting a bunch of lawsuits where you're spending a whole lot of money trying to eliminate all the antennas from your town, they don't stand a chance in hell of succeeding. That's going to go on for years. It's not going to have a happy outcome. The people in the town are now making jokes about the fact that their property taxes are being doubled because they're paying all these attorneys with all these lawsuits. That shows you the degree of misinformation that can happen. We all have some friends and relatives who live in Bayville. It's going to take a long period of time, but let me drop this. We're going to have to slowly convince them that radio is their friend, it is not their enemy. It's going to take a long time because each of the residents have all convinced each other that this is what it is. It is sort of a posse-like mentality, if you know what I mean. So you got to be careful with misunderstanding of radio protection and what damage it can do to human beings. And if you really look at the well-documented articles like the ones I've mentioned, if you look at any of those 450 references in that American National Standards Institute C95 document, now you're getting to the heart of the problem. You're getting to the material that is traceable to the Bureau of Standards. You're getting material that was produced by very good colleges, institutions, and testing laboratories. And you're not just using hearsay. The word radiation is a dangerous sounding word, and the hearsay that can be created from that can really get out of sight. That's a bunch of very strong opinions, John, and as you research this further, I'd like you to come back and tell us what you find. You're on a darn good subject, and there's a definite need for the research you're doing, and the answer has got to be propagated. KC2, hold on a minute, Wesley. KC2, TDL, John, tell me what you think you've heard so far, and wait for the beep, and don't time out like I just did, K2LAW.
Well, let's just say I'm sitting in my kitchen right now with a antenna reading 5 watts, roughly 3 feet from my head, and there is a drawer filled with metal spoons, forks, knives, whatnot, right in front of me. I'm not scared about RF radiation. I'm just telling you what I read. And, you know, I think you are right that there are a bit too liberal out there with the concept of radios. You know, just like you said with Bayville, radio is our friend. And, you know, I plan to keep it that way. You know, I got a radio that can transmit up to 50 watts of power. And in some cases, like when I'm trying to reach a foreign repeater, you know, 50 watts on 146 megahertz, you know, I will do it. And there's an antenna, like, right above my head. I'm not scared of RF. And I will probably do more research. You know, I got a computer, I got the internet, I'll look through all that, and I'll keep that C95 document in mind. KC2TDL, back to net.
Now, you said it twice, John, that the metal knives and forks that are in your drawer, tell me what you believe is their connection to the 2-meter radio or any of the other radios that you're using. What do you believe is the connection of those metallic objects that are in the same room with you? Go ahead, John.
Metal, such as silverware, can receive and then retransmit electrical signals. Of course, I doubt those signals are strong enough to cause any kind of damage. If I carried a fork, let's say, around with myself for my entire life, it would probably be impossible for me to die due to RF exposure if I just, you know, roamed the land, roamed my life with just carrying a fork. You know, that metal would not retransmit enough electricity unless I, like, touched it with an electrical power line. That would kill me. But, you know, there's not enough RF energy to, like, retransmit onto the the forks and spoons and knives and whatnot to kill me. I think we're in a relatively safe position. I don't think all these cell phone towers and everything are going to, like, cause cancer or anything. But, you know, you got to take this with a grain of salt.
Yeah, the length of that fork or the length of that knife is probably in the vicinity of 8 inches. That means it probably has a half-wave resonance at around 600 megacycles. Rough rule of thumb, maybe 800 megacycles. So if there was a strong transmitter nearby at 800 megacycles, if that fork was suspended in a low dielectric material, like a chunk of foam, yes, it would pick up some of the 600 megs, re-radiate it. Therefore, if you stood in the near field of the fork, I guess there is a slim possibility that the portion of your body near that fork would see twice as much signal as the rest of your body at 800 megs and every third harmonic beyond that. But when you're at a much lower frequency, like 144 megs or 432, where the fork is a non-resonant material, it has almost no what's called radar cross-section. In other words, let me drop. It has almost no ability to pick up enough signal. It's got too little area to pick up enough signal. You take a look at a good 432 megacycle Yagi, or a 2 meter Yagi, or a corner reflector made for either of those frequencies. You see a lot of area, radio-wise area to those antennas, are capable of picking up a significant amount of signal. That fork as a dipole, being non-resonant, it's not there. Really not there. If I made some careful measurements in your kitchen, right now where you're sitting, and then I walked over there and took that drawer of all of those forks and knives, removed it and put it in your backyard, and re-measured how much radio signal was in the vicinity of where you're standing, with good laboratory test equipment sensitive to the nearest tenth of a dB, I doubt I could see the difference. They're non-resonant at the frequencies you're talking about. So, yes, it's easy. Let me drop. It's easy for somebody to write articles with partial knowledge saying that every piece of metal is reflecting radio signals and reflecting the ultraviolet rays from the sun and just go on and on and on, and make you afraid of everything metallic. I could also start becoming afraid of everything non-metallic. Non-metallic objects are also capable of doing focusing. I can take chunks of wood and cut it into the right shape so it acts like a lens, a dielectric lens, and I could do some focusing if I was real careful and made it very large and I was smart enough. So I don't think those particular objects are relevant. As you dig deeper into this, John, I think you're going to find that some of the articles you've been exposed to are maybe not good articles, not from a peer-reviewed journal, not traceable to the Bureau of Standards, not traceable to the ANSI report or the IEEE or Science magazine and so on. So you got to be careful and look at the source. When it comes to the amount of misinformation, when it comes to exposure of asbestos, cigarette smoke, and radio signals and so on, there's a lot of information and a lot of misinformation. So as you dig into that, let us know what you find. It's a fun subject. It's a good subject to become educated on, and a hell of a lot of, let me drop, hell of a lot of people have only partial education on this subject. An awful lot of the information that the general public is exposed to has more emotional content than science content. And that's a sad state of affairs. On 12 occasions, I have stood before zoning boards defending amateur radio operators who wanted to install an antenna in their backyard. So in 12 different communities, I've heard what the local communities think of radio and radio radiation, a darn word. And boy, do they misunderstand it. And I've heard an awful lot of emotional, angry people expressing opinions that have 90% error and 10% information, if you know what I mean. So it's a good subject to get educated on, and when you help educate your friends, particularly the ones in Basil, if we can slowly convince our friends in Basil, and it's going to take a generation, I can see how firmly entrenched the attitudes in Basil are. Let me drop. As it is right now, if you wanted to operate a business in Bayville, or if you wanted to conduct business in Bayville, and if you didn't profess the opinions of that community, they will shun you, they will not give you their business, and if you live there, they will not treat you well. Their opinion is that strong. Unfortunately, it's misinterpretation. I have relatives in that town who will no longer talk to me because I don't agree with their opinions, therefore they can't tolerate my opinions. If they really want to live that simple a life where they disengage themselves completely from all wireless equipment, the local government will not allow them to do that. The federal, the state, the county, the Department of Homeland Security, none of those people are going to let them do what they desire. The only choice they have is to live with the Amish and the Mennonite people in Pennsylvania and live a very simple agrarian life. Other than that, wireless products are here to stay. They are very strong in committing to in creating safety for our population. You can no longer go back to the dark ages when we didn't have wireless equipment. You have no choice. You either accept it or decide to go live with those particular people. There is nothing in between that I know of. That is the bottom line. It's going to take the many thousands of dollars, many hours of anguish, many dollars flowing to attorneys that are going to defend them because they desire the defense and they seem to have the resources to pay for it, but nothing is going to change. And if anything is going to change, the number of antennas in the town will eventually increase in order to give coverage to the 15% of that community that does not have radio coverage today. And people in those sections of town have a higher probability of perishing because of a lack of safety radio equipment. Let me drop. Okay. I've expressed this pretty strong opinion. You know where I stand. Wesley, I know you wanted to say something on this subject. You've been doing some research on radio and what it does with the human beings, and I think so has N2NNU. So, Wesley, go right ahead with your comment. K2RIW on the TechNet.
Well, N2HCN. I'm going to defend you to a certain extent. What I want to explain to everybody who does not understand how the human body reacts on the radio waves is that the statement was, when I put my finger into the contact of the antenna, the radio starts to receive. Well, imagine one thing. You take a piece of wire, put it into that antenna, and connect it to the cold water pipe that is burnt, or connect it to your radiator. By all principles, this radiator is supposed to be a ground. So you're not supposed to receive any signals. Guess what? You're going to have much more stronger signals that you're going to receive on this 2 meter than you're receiving from your body. It's the mass and the contents of the mass that is important per square centimeter. That is important when we're talking about the radio waves and your inductance as an antenna. But not how much of this energy is accumulated in your body. Let me drop. Additional factor. If you have 110 dB speaker next to your head, it's going to damage your hearing. But if you have it 10 meters away, which is 30 feet away, it's completely safe. But then you have something like your cell phone ringer. In some of the cell phones, this sound is very high pitch and it's ringing, and you have it next to your ear. What is going to happen, you might of much be more in danger to damage your hearing by listening to this sound. So again, is the frequency, is the resonance. If that frequency happens to resonate with your internal hearing organ, even with the small power that it does have, it's going to
cannot damage it. And so, actually, I'm supporting this with a jig set and two XGN.
Very glad you said what you said, Wesley. You brought up an extremely good point with reference to the water pipe or the radiator. When it comes to the word ground, there's three main reasons why we ground our radio equipment. Reason number one is human safety from electrical shock. You would like to ground your equipment so that if an error occurred in the LIPA wiring, so that the hot lead of your power cord going to your radio equipment happened to touch the chassis, and the chassis becomes 120 volts hot because there's a hot lead and a return lead of 120 volt wiring in your house, then you touch that chassis and touch something like a water pipe, there's 120 volts of difference between the two, and potentially you could get an electrical shock and go into fibrillation or whatever. The third wire of that plug, the green wire, the big prong, so to speak, the round prong, gives you some grounding. An additional backup grounding would be another wire from the equivalent of the chassis of your equipment to a good grounded system, whether it be a ground rod, the water pipe, the radiator, things like that. Let me drop. So that's reason number one, human safety. Reason number two is lightning protection. If in the very rare incidents a lightning strikes your antenna, crawls down the outside or the inside of your coax cable and touches the chassis of your radio, if the radio is well grounded, the radio doesn't become voltage-wise hot compared to the rest of the house, and that's a much safer condition. The third reason that we ground our equipment is that we think we're creating a radio ground, and that's desirable. At a frequency like 160 meters, relatively easy to do. You get up to a frequency like 2 meters, 144 megacycles, where each wavelength is something like 3 feet long, and that water pipe that you think is a good ground has to go not 3 feet, but 13 feet before it reaches Earth. You think that water pipe is ground. Radio-wise, it's a whole lot of inductance, it's a whole lot of wavelengths away from ground. And the word radio ground is a very mysterious subject. Let me drop. To establish a good ground radio-wise, particularly at the upper HF and VHF and UHF frequencies, extremely difficult, in many cases impossible, and even if you could do it, most of the time you would not get benefit from it. A naive person thinks that if he puts a very wide piece of copper strap from his 2-meter radio over to the water pipe, he has created a good RF ground. When it comes to ground number one or ground number two, he's done a good job. When it comes to radio, most likely not. So you think that that radiator and that the water pipe is grounded, and as Wesley just told you, you put a clip lead between the center conductor of your radio and that water pipe. That length of wire and the rest of that wiring of the water pipe for the next 13 feet before it reaches Earth makes a beautiful antenna. The far end of it is grounded. You're using the non-grounded end. You're making the equivalent of an almost end-fed ZEP antenna. It'll pick up some beautiful signal. It may not have a good standing wave ratio. It may not be a good antenna to transmit into, but because a radio receiver is so sensitive and because it is so forgiving to a standing wave ratio mismatch, you can have a 30-to-1 standing wave ratio on the antenna you connect to your receiver, and it'll do a beautiful job of receiving. Antennas are, receivers are extremely forgiving. Let me drop. So, the bottom line of all this is the word radio ground at VHF frequencies almost doesn't exist. If you really had to create a good radio ground at a VHF frequency, it would be a very large sheet of copper with your radio in the middle of it, and that sheet of copper would have to go for many feet in all directions. That's a good radio ground. Even though it's floating 10 feet above Earth, that would be a good radio ground, a good local radio ground. So what you think is ground and what really is ground at VHF frequencies is a strong misunderstanding in that area, very difficult to establish. And I'll repeat the story that happened at the company where I worked. You guys have heard this one before, but it bears repeating. Let me drop. The company was going through a great big investigation with reference to electrostatic discharge.
In those days, we were using integrated circuits where if an electrostatic discharge occurred because somebody scuffed his feet across the wool rug and then touched that integrated circuit, he could create a latent